Log Talk Radio.
And a pleasant good evening to you. Welcome to another episode of Can We Be Real? This is Reverend Carl White, and we're so happy that you're joining us tonight. We're going to be talking about manhood tonight. However, if you'd like to follow us, you can follow us on Twitter. We're located at Help Somebody. That's twitter.com/HelpSomebody. Or you can look at me up on our website. We're located at www.HelpSomebody.net. And tonight we're talking about manhood. And what does it mean to really be a man? What is the characteristics of manhood? Really, what is manhood? Is manhood based on money and muscles? Or is it based on machoism? What is the truth about being a man? What are the myths about being a man? How about what is a real man? Are we really able to define the characteristics of a good man? These are just some of the things that we'll be talking about this evening. And we're looking up and looking forward to our company this evening. We're going to have our minister, Rick Grimes, to join me as we discuss manhood. And we're going to get into some of the tools that we can use to actually build up manhood. And how is it that we can educate young men to grow and to mature into healthy manhood? What are the good examples of manhood? I think that, like the song says in the background, we need to, if we bear all things, and we believe all things, and we hope all things, endure all things. But the greatest of these, charity or love. And a pleasant good evening to you, Minister Rick Grimes. Are you on the line with us tonight?
I'm here with you, Carl. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listening audience.
It's good to have you here. Thank you for joining us this evening. We had this conversation and had some ideas about talking about manhood and what it means to be a man. So why don't we just get right into it? And it looks like, let me see here. So if you had to tell our listening audience, what is manhood? What would your definition of manhood be?
Well, Carl, I tell you, this is a very important subject to me. I have spent most of my life in search of manhood. And I don't know if you were aware or any of your listening audience, but I've never met my biological father. So this has been something that's been very important and close to me when we have this discussion about manhood. But I want to be very clear that on a very general level, when we are discussing manhood, from a general perspective, manhood, man, first of all, being male by birth, i.e., when we're talking about man, we're talking about adult male, and hood, by definition, we're talking about individuals sharing a specified state or character. And so from those two words, we get manhood. And so we're clear that in manhood, as we have this discussion, that from a general perspective, we're talking, i.e., someone who is adult male, and also we're talking about an individual who shares specified state or character with other males. So that's on a general level.
So do you think that being a man, to a certain degree, as an adult male, then there would be a physical aspect to him. And so having some big muscles and being strong, would that fit into being an adult male?
Well, I think that when we talk about manhood, We talk about, as I stated early, specified characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that from the perspective of a holistic perspective of manhood, we're talking about when we look at those characteristics, we're looking at responsibility, accountability, courageous, maturity, connectedness, also authentic and committed. Those are some of those words that we know definitely from a holistic perspective define manhood, but are not limited to just those that were mentioned.
Let's go over your list again. We had responsibility, authenticity, you had accountability.
Uh-huh. Courageous.
Courageous.
Maturity.
Uh-huh.
The person has to be connected and committed.
And committed. And when by connected, what do you mean connected?
Well, when we talk about manhood, and we talk about manhood from a holistic perspective,
mm-hmm.
that means that the individual is connected not only to oneself, but to one's community. You're connected to one's family. You're connected to a broader sense of the universe around you. And so one has to be connected in a physical sense, an emotional sense, and a spiritual sense when we talked about when we speak of manhood and being connected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, and I couldn't help but to notice that even with the holistic point of view and looking at manhood, we're talking about some characteristics that are transferable, that are responsibility, action, authenticity, committed, courage, those are characteristics that could be embodied by males or females.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very clear from a holistic perspective, although the topic is clearly defined, we're talking about manhood.
Mm-hmm.
We do realize that these same characteristics also can exist in womanhood.
Yes.
But because we're talking from a holistic perspective, we know that we share in manhood the characteristics of being connected, being committed, being responsible, being authentic, being accountable, being mature, being courageous.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things we share in common in our manhood, but it's not excluded just to manhood. It is also very prevalent in womanhood.
So I thought that because I told one of my friends this, that I tell my daughters sometimes to man up.
Well, that's one of the phrases we use quite a bit, and particularly in the Black community, we tend to use those words. I would caution to say that whenever we use those words, I'm not sure that we have a clear, defined definition of what we're saying to someone when we tell a young child or we say to another man to man up.
Mm-hmm.
We say those words so often, but I'm not sure that we're very defined or clear on what that means.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from my idea is that oftentimes, you know, little girls respond to things by crying.
Mm-hmm.
Little boys respond to things by getting angry. And so taking those definitions and characteristics as we look at young children and with regard to society, sometimes we need to be angry. You know, we may need to be angry at ourselves because we didn't perform as well as we know we could have if we would have prepared a little better. And so instead of crying in that incident, then we would look at it and say, well, maybe if I would just toughen up a little bit. So do you think there's some aspects to manhood that, you know, require you to be tough?
I caution with that word in the sense that I know that it also plays along gender lines, and it also moves us into a place of where we can easily fall into myths about manhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I, although I duly note in the perspective in which you're using the word,
mm-hmm.
I also caution that sometimes those words can have different meanings when they're used in different ways.
Yeah.
And so part of when we move into the discussion of some of the myths around manhood, I list five of the very common things that we as men experience in our communities that words really do have power, and how those words feed into our misunderstanding of what we think manhood is.
I know some researchers have said that there's concrete behaviors of individuals. It's a consequence of what's both socially enforced and also what we garner from our culture. And so the concrete behaviors, they're subject to change according to the culture. And with that in mind, and then there's some it's rules and values in there, and how do we get an idea of what true manhood is? Is it set to a time and space?
Well, I think it's constantly evolving as we evolve in our consciousness and our spiritual aspect as beings. I believe that manhood is constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And we can look and see how it has evolved just by how we function as a culture and as a society. My father's generation, there would not have been many men who stay at home and take care of kids and
right.
do house chores and drop kids off to different various activities. That would not have been very prevalent in his day and time of his understanding of manhood.
Yes.
But we have now evolved, and we do realize that in where we are now, that more men are doing those roles and are providing that attention and adding into the household in ways that we would not have seen maybe 15, 20, maybe 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly evolving on the manhood.
Yeah. So what are some of the myths about manhood that we've come into embody in our culture now? Because I know, like, some of them, like, men couldn't do housework. Men always had to be the sole breadwinner and not to do the cooking and so forth. And being that our time, like you said, our dads and our dad's generation, it really wasn't popular. But there were men who were cooks in our generation, in our dad's generation, who, you know, some of them were actually better cooks than the moms.
I would agree, Carl. Mm-hmm. And I sort of listed five of the most common myths that sort of prevail around our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm speaking in the context of Black African-American males.
Okay.
And so number one is the one you sort of alluded to earlier. Men should be physically strong. That's one myth that we carry. They, you know, i.e. to fight, to control, to inflict, to punish.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the myth that we carry in our community about manhood, is that men should be physically strong. So, you know, they have that ability to fight and to control and to inflict and to punish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one strong myth that we carry in our community. Two, equally a strong myth that we carry in our community, men should be able to, and excuse this expression, but it's very common with men, F-U-C-K, real good and often, equating manhood to endless sexual conquest, gaining stature and economic success. After all, we say in our community, men will be men.
Right.
So that's another very strong
kind of tag on that. If we have a man who's really promiscuous in that area, he's labeled as a player. But a woman, she's labeled as less
pretty negative.
Human.
Yeah.
she's
but
known
after
as
all,
a,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, because it's cool for the men.
Well,
yeah, if a woman engages in the same behavior, then all of a sudden she's not to be respected at all.
Oh, we're definitely Carl. And I think that earlier when you used the phrase man up, so often with our young men, that becomes the phrase for F-U-C-K. It's
right.
Like, okay, you know, man up. You should be doing this, you know, because
right,
if you're
right,
not doing
right.
this, you're not exerting your manhood.
Uh-huh,
and so that's why I said I caution with that word, because so often that word is used in a variety of ways. And when I work with the youth, that's usually when I come across the man up phrases in that term or in that direction. And so we find men, or at least our young males, thinking that manhood equates to endless sexual conquest. You know, after all, you should be doing what boys do.
Right. And it's one of the things, too, that now even, you know, talking with some of the youth, they've taken some of the words and given them new meaning. So that particular meaning of man up, I hadn't heard that, but they did. I was talking to one group, and they were telling me about the definition of cut buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Your cut buddy is a person that you just have casual sex with at random.
Right.
And so I said, oh, well, in our day, my cut buddy was my buddy who might go ride bikes or, you know, he helped me on my paper route or something. But
So now
everything does change. And so, like you said, it's good to know the vernacular of the individuals that you are communicating with. But let's move on past that number two. I know that's a heavy one.
Yeah, number three, we've got equating manhood with practices of emotional abuse as well as shaming in our community. And we use phrases like, that's what men do.
Mm-hmm.
Stop acting like a sissy.
Right.
Real men don't cry. Take it like a man.
Mm-hmm.
Act like a man.
Mm-hmm.
Quit crying like a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And you act like a punk.
So
that's where we get into the myths around manhood and the practices of emotional abuse as well as shaming that is very prevalent in our communities. And we think that that's part of manhood when we use those phrases, that equates to manhood. And
do you think that it's actually the emotional detachment from being able to cry is tied into this super strong physical strength, you know, fighting, control, and punishing, as you say in number one?
Well, I think we socialize young males at a very early age to be cut off from emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We start right away telling them, you know, boys don't cry, you know, take it like a man, you know, the phrase you used earlier, man up.
Mm-hmm.
We use phrases as, you know, we tell a young boy, you know, well, that's what girls do, you
right.
know. So young boys are not able to express if they're hurt, if they're upset, if they're embarrassed, if they're, you know, whatever emotional things that they're going through. A lot of times it's not so much the fathers in the home that are shaming or emotionally abusing these young males. A lot of times it's the moms who have this idea or concept that they want their man to be a real man. And so they, a lot of times, are more prevalent in the shaming and abuse in single-parent homes with young males.
That's interesting, though, that the emotional detachment that's reinforced by being strong. But there is one emotion that's normally expressed in young men and also grown men, and that's anger.
Right. Right.
And it develops into rage because.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
And whenever one is not able to emotionally express themselves, the end result ends up in anger and rage. And so we see quite often on the news and in media and through many different outlets, we see young black males very angry, very violent, and we wonder what happened to these males. How did they get this way? What caused them to be so angry and so violent? Well, when you socialize one to be detached from their emotions, that's the byproduct. And so, unfortunately, we have produced a whole society of anger and violent and frustrated males in our culture and in our society. So we see it very prevalent throughout, and that's the end result of what we get. Well, girls, on the other hand, are socialized to be in touch with their emotions and their feelings. So they have another way of channeling problems and conflicts in a way that is different than how we socialize young boys.
So now we've got a group of young men who aren't in touch with their own emotions and don't have a positive way of handling rejection, frustration, fear, and it allowing it to go into anger. But yet and still, our females are taught how to handle these type of things. Let's go into number four before we start moving towards solutions.
Yeah, number four is one that we see quite often in our community, and that is males, they prove their manhood by making babies. Black men continue to believe that their purpose is simply to sire children, not being responsible fathers. So now we've got all of these males who believe manhood is equated to siring babies, making babies.
Right.
So we got all these baby mamas, and we brag about our baby mamas. You know, I got a baby mama over here, baby mama over there, but never making the connection that it's not about siring the kids, but it's actually about being a responsible father, not just making babies. That's not what manhood is.
Mm-hmm. Now, a co-contributor to that fact, too, is often both the male and the female will come from a home that they did not receive love. And one contributing factor is the females who may say, well, I'm going to have this baby as someone who's going to love me unconditionally. But the problem is that the baby, being a baby, can't give love unconditionally. They have to receive love unconditionally.
Well, definitely.
Mm-hmm, with that thought. And now the men, with them not being responsible, so does that feed into the emotional detachment from being a man?
From a holistic perspective, it does.
Mm-hmm.
We socialize young men at a very young age, and we see it so often even today, very, very, very often, that moms, single moms who are raising boys, the first thing that the mom will do is supply the young boy or the young male with condoms and say, okay, baby, you know, use these, or I want you to have these. So we're almost endorsing that boys are going to do what boys do, as I alluded to earlier. Men do what men do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're never having the real conversations with our young males, with our young boys about connectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke earlier about that connectedness piece and that responsible piece. And so what happens is, without having a full conversation, silence also speaks loudly. Sometimes we don't understand that our silence is speaking louder than when we're actually having words. So our non-communication is so powerful. So a lot of times we find moms saying, okay, well, I'm in a sense condoning your behavior to go out and have sex with girls, because after all, you're a male. That's what you do. So we never talk about the responsibility and the connectiveness.
And
so,
the other side of it is not you're not saying don't give the young men condoms.
Oh, definitely not.
What you're saying is
have the full conversation.
Have a comprehensive sexual education.
Exactly.
That allows you to know that not only condoms are part of it, but abstinence may be a part of it, or monogamy, and having a conversation that allows you to be connected with the youth so that they could be educated through your experience as you share with them as well.
Exactly, because I believe that our young males are not able to process at the level that we adults are, at the level that we're at. So I think sometimes we just assume that they get it, but they really don't. And so part of what needs to happen along with the condoms is real conversations about commitment, being connected, being accountable, being responsible. And when I say responsible doesn't just mean use a condom. Responsible means am I ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to, you know, am I entering in something at a point in my life where I'm ready? Because a lot of times kids are not even ready for that responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's having the full conversation with our male, with our black males, not just saying, okay, we want you to be protected, here's some condoms, but having a real sit-down conversation. And that way we prepare our youth, we prepare our young men to be more prepared when they do move into the place where they say, okay, I'm ready to now have a physical or intimate relationship because I have all of these other components in place. Now I'm more prepared. I've moved into manhood because now I have the checklist. I'm actually moving into manhood and not just committing the act. So,
now,
yes.
What do you think some of the reasons why we as a society at large, I'd say for the majority of people across the spectrum, being black, white, Jew, Gentile, Sioux, American Indian, or Eskimo, we're unwilling to have these sexual conversations. It's almost taboo. I mean, they say you're not supposed to talk about religion and politics, but it seems that there's a deafening silence on sexuality, and just some of the stats are 750,000 teenagers on average get pregnant yearly, with 50% of those ending in abortion. Why do you think, Minister Grimes, why do you think we're so unwilling to break the silence when it comes to speaking to youth about sexuality?
Well, I think it goes back to what you alluded to earlier, Carl. I believe it's cultural. I think we're just a few generations removed from slavery. And so part of that cultural toxicity that was passed down was, as slaves we were taught, whatever the master did to you on the plantation, you better not tell, because if your master found out, he'll whoop you real good. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of pass that down from generation to generation in our families, where we silence about the sexual abuse, because a lot of sexual abuse took place on the plantation. And so the master had, you were property. The master did a lot with the slaves, male and female, because they were property, and the master was able to do whatever the master chose to do. The other part of that cultural component that we are still challenged in fighting with is the fact that for black people, our sexuality was deemed not in a good light. We were deemed devious and lascivious and
super sexual
and super sexual,
right.
And so all of our all of our sexuality kind of went into a very negative place in the media, and so for us, we are still looming under that umbrella of shame surrounding sexuality, and it's so prevalent even in our religious institutions, where we're not able to discuss the greatest gift is our spirituality and our sexuality. We can spend a lot of time in the institution talking about our spirituality in ways, but when it comes to our sexuality, there's dead silence. There's shame. There's guilt. And that's part of the process of why parents, particularly when we talk about manhood and black males, we're not having those discussions, because if I'm shamed as a parent about what I do sexually, it's going to be very hard for me then to pass on or to share with my son or my daughter about their sexuality and what they do.
Now, you're listening to Can We Be Real? We're right here with Reverend Carl White and my guest, Minister Rick Grimes. We're talking about manhood. What is manhood? Money, muscles, machoism? But right now we're talking about the sexuality portion. So you can always follow me on helpsomebody.net. And we're moving on. Our minister, Rick, has been giving us the five myths that have been associated about manhood. Number one is being physically strong. Number two is that you got to be a super sexual being. Number three is that you are practice emotional abuse in a sense of shaming it, and statements like take it like a man and don't be a punk. And number four is prove your manhood by making babies. And now, Minister Rick, you're going to give us number five. What is number five?
Number five is something that we have dealt with since the beginning of time, and that is the myth around manhood is synonymous with domination, control over, i.e., women and kids. By being male, we are in a position of authority. And so that's a myth that we still grapple with even today when we talk about the myths of manhood, and we see how men act out in such a way, and they feel by right, by birthright of being male, that they're able to have control over, i.e. women and kids, and we see acts of violence and crime acted out from males on the rest of our community.
That is so very true, especially the domination. It falls into linear thinking, in that, you know, God is high and above, and somewhere beneath him is the pastors and the bishops and the acolytes, but when it comes to the household, definitely the man is the head of the household, and everything that falls under that head is got to come underneath my headship. And it is quite hilarious. And in fact, one pastor put it this way. He said it's after the fall thinking.
Because
that began in Genesis 3, where he said that the man shall rule over you. And they used biblical scripture to actually reinforce that hierarchical thinking. And but if you look at Genesis 1 and 2, they were co-creators in creation. And I think that's one of the major things that causes so much, and it also sets the men up for this false sense of superiority.
Well, just be mindful that whenever you're in a mindset or in a position to dominate something, you have to exert a high level of energy to do that.
Yes.
So whenever you're trying to control something, I do counseling with couples, and I'm always reminding them that whenever there's this sense of control and this sense of manipulation that goes on in relationships, the one who's doing the controlling and manipulating don't realize the impact of how it's affecting them. They think that it's working for them, but they don't really see the impact and how it's impacting them in a very negative way to try to maintain that control and manipulation. And so even when we look at black males and we talk about manhood, just the idea of trying to maintain that dominance and that control, it takes its toll. And so we even find with black males, we see in so many ways, as you spoke of earlier, talking about the rage and the anger, those things are very prevalent because to try to maintain that, it brings out all of those attributes and traits that we see very common in males and in manhood.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that it's almost like you have to go out in the world and fight, and then you fight for status, position, and control. And then when you get home, now you have to fight again with the very people who ought to be on your team.
Right. And it can work in the opposite, where you come home and then because you felt like you've had to do all of that out in the workplace and out in the world, that when you come home, now you move into a place of complete dominance. So you lose that connectiveness with the people who love you and you love, because now it's like at home, I may can't get it in the workplace and in the world, but at home, I want complete dominance.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, tell us, how would this statement fit into our holistic discussion of men? When you are a man, you do not need to prove it.
Well, it's just that, and I think you said it so eloquent. When you are a man, there is a simplicity about just being that you really don't have to. You don't have to try to find or to manufacture what you already are. Now, right before we had this discussion, I was just kind of staring out on the deck of my home and watching the squirrels and the birds and all of the different things in nature, and they have something that they're better off for than what we are in society and in nature. Is squirrels just act like squirrels. Birds just naturally act like other birds. Mm-hmm. Well, we find with the human species that we're trying to mimic a bunch of stuff. We're mimicking stuff from, we transform every day. And, you know, we're like the Transformers. We see something else, now we're that.
Uh-huh,
and so
uh-huh.
We're never our authentic self because we're always trying to emanate or be a facsimile of something else that we've heard or saw. And so we never move into that authentic place, which you said so eloquent. You don't have to prove to be a man. It is just who you are. You simply be.
Right, right. Just by you showing up on the scene, it's almost like your charisma or your presence. It sets the level of respect because you have the respect because you give the respect.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the core issues, would you say there are problems with manhood? And I know we're kind of dwelling on the myths and the downside of manhood, and we're going to move to solution because we're heading down to the last 20 minutes, and funny how time flies.
Yes,
but the core issues of identity, would you say there's an anxiety and unwillingness to show vulnerability?
Well, I think that that's part of what the whole thing makes out. It creates anxiety because for black males, just when you thought you figured out what being a man is, something else comes along and challenges that.
Mm-hmm,
and so it creates even more anxiety, you know. And so that's part of the whole myth thing. It's so many myths about what it is to be a man that just when we think we got the corner or the patent on what it is to be a man or to have manhood, then something else shows up on the scene, and now it challenges all of what we thought we just completed or at least got a handle on. And so now we go into anxiety and frustration because we thought we knew what it was. And now here's someone with something else. And now we've got something else to try to obtain to be a man. It never stops.
It reminds me of Richard Pryor in The Wiz. When they finally, when Dorothy and Toto and Michael Jackson and Nipsey Russell, they all found him. And he, oh, I'm just really scared. I'm just little poor, whatever his name was. And,
right, right.
Yeah, you know, and so we live behind these great big false silver heads with flame and smoke and...
Right,
and,
right.
And hoping nobody will pull our little sheets off. And it makes for a very unstable way of living. Now what tools and skills can we use to develop manhood?
Well, I think the healing process for men have to first begin with black. First, we have to acknowledge that black men can heal,
mm-hmm.
and the healing process requires that we break through denial. Feel what we feel, and tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That starts the process, and mm-hmm. that is the starting of the process for the healing process for black men to move into manhood. We have to be able to say what it is. We have to be able to come out of denial. We have to be able to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things move us now into the process of healing. Black males who lie to themselves and to everyone in their lives are unable to experience integrity that is essential to emotional well-being, that is the core of healthy self-esteem.
Now, one of the things that most have a problem with, and it's easier, it always seems easier to lie and to build up these false images, back to Richard again, but the problem is that how do we go about that? You know, everybody says, you know, just tell the truth, but, you know.
Well, I would say, Carl, as black males, we have to courageously confront the pain in our lives, facing reality, and we have to be able to take the broken bits and pieces and make them, and be able to make them whole again.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be able to state in our lives, and that really means when we say being courageously able to confront the pain, it's to be able to get in touch with our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how often I come across black males who you can see that they're troubled, and you can try to reach out to them in manhood or in brotherhood, and they're like, oh, I'm fine, ain't nothing wrong.
Right.
You know, I'm straight. I'm fine.
Right.
And it's like, brother, you are crumbling at the seams.
Mm-hmm.
Can you let that go and courageously move to be able to confront the pain, be able to face reality, and now we can move in support of each other and move into that place of the healing process. So often that's very hard for black men. We've become accustomed of lying, just saying that everything's fine when it's not.
And we don't really want to engage in the discipline that's necessary to face the frustration, the anger, the unforgiveness, the jealousy, the bitterness, and to do that, oftentimes we need a safe space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't create that for black males. Unfortunately, black males are not allowed to socialize in ways and in situations where emotions are involved, because society, again, says to black males, that's unmanly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we snatch away the very thing that black males need the most,
mm-hmm.
and that's to be able to have a safe space, to be able to speak the truth, to be able to get in touch with what the pain is. And so the very essence of that healing process in society, we snatch that away because we say black men are not supposed to feel, are not a, are not supposed to show emotions. Mm-hmm. Are not a, because then if we do those things, then our manhood is in question. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You're absolutely right, Brother Carl. We have to create safe spaces so we can begin to heal as men. We can begin to have healthy lives and productive lives and build self-esteem for ourselves, because it's very hard to do that until we are able to express the truth about mm-hmm. where we are.
Mm-hmm. And have a place where we can get it off our chest.
Exactly.
Because I think so many times, we carry around the dead baby.
Right.
The Solomon, when he decided between the two women over the live baby, we don't ever hear about the dead baby anymore.
Right.
But folks will carry anger, guilt, frustration, fear.
Okay.
You know, that I was abused, I was misused, I was molested, all of these things. I had a broken marriage. I had all kind of traumatic things to go on in my life. And we carry it like it's precious jewels. Now, coming to that realization, how were you able to overcome some of that?
Well, I think I'm still in that process. I think we all
are. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. So it's not a destination.
Oh, no. I think we're all still in that process of evolving and trying to discover and rediscover ourselves and to find out our authentic beings. And for some of us, the real work is being able to challenge the status quo of what has been given to us about manhood. Some
mm-hmm.
of us are willing to make that leap of faith to challenge some of those societal norms that have been given to us. Others are too afraid, and so there's a balancing act that we all do on a regular basis as black males, as we define manhood. And we're constantly impacted in various ways. So just when you think you have accomplished one area of growth and moving into manhood, then something else resurfaces, comes up, and so we're constantly evolving in that way. But I did, I think that it's good to know that there are five self skills for healthy manhood,
okay.
And those five self skills that constitute adult maturity is number one, self esteem. Holding the self in warm regard. We have to have that to move into healthy manhood. Number two, self-awareness, knowing one's own experience and sharing it. You have to know yourself. You have
right.
to be very clear about who you are. And
mm-hmm.
then once you are able to define or at least to identify who you are, be able to share that with another brother or another man.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, boundaries are so important for us. And you spoke about that safe space,
mm-hmm.
self-protecting, yet able to connect with others. And sometimes we have to be able to find that space to self-protect, but still be able to connect with others in a very meaningful way. Number four, interdependence, identifying needs and wants and caring for self, yet able to receive care from others. Now, that's a very big one for men and manhood.
Can you repeat that one again? Interdependence.
Interdependence, and that's identifying needs and wants and caring for self, yet able to receive care from others. So often we have a hard time accepting or receiving care from others and being able to at least identify what our needs are and our wants.
You know,
sometimes
one person said that it was actually easier to give than it is to receive.
Oh, well, for a lot of us, we exist that way.
Because if I say that I have a need,
right.
then all of a sudden it denotes that I'm lacking, I'm less
exactly.
than, I'm not
exactly.
worthy. So what's the fifth one?
The fifth is moderation, experiencing and expressing oneself moderately. And that is so important as black males, that we are able to express and experience ourselves moderately, not feeling like that we have to dominate or be the center of the attention or having to gain, as they say, come in and take up the room instead of just be a part of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very critical for us in our healthy manhood.
Exactly, exactly. One quote was that you're only as sick as your secrets.
Exactly.
And I think that one of the things I say, we always move to solution, but I have added a few letters in there, and I say move to solution.
Mm-hmm.
So that peace, you know,
right.
With your soul,
with
your essence of who you are, your identity, your isness. You know, when people ask who you are, and we tell them our name and where I work and what I do and all that. But I didn't ask you that.
Right.
Who are you intrinsically? And I think that the Spirit of God allows us to have that connectivity with others when we're true to the God that's in us.
Well, and I think we see it from a biblical perspective. We see it quite often, and I'm going to speak from a Christian perspective, but I could go into other perspectives. But from a Christian perspective, we see it very often in the encounters in the New Testament with Jesus. You know, I often wonder why Jesus was asking Legion, "What is your name?"
Yes.
Like if Jesus didn't already know,
right.
But it was crucial for Jesus to have Legion to identify who he was.
Yes.
And we find even with the, you know, with the woman at the well, we clearly see Jesus saying, you know, when she's been bought into account by men about adultery, and Jesus just kind of lets her play out her own scenario, and Jesus says, well, you know, well, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so she goes on and kind of has a dialogue with Jesus, and then Jesus just kind of cracks and says, well, you know, the cat you got at home ain't even your husband. But I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right,
I'm okay with that.
Right. That doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because long as you okay with who you are, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, and so Jesus had a way of drawing her in into a dialogue that was non-judgmental. And so if we could do that, if we could practice those traits of allowing people to just be who they are and
yes.
not be who we want them to be, who we would like them to conform to and just let them be, then we create healthy manhood. And mm-hmm. that may look in a variety of ways. And so not everything is a cookie cutter, you know, not one pattern defines manhood, because that's where we get trapped.
Yeah. And it's even as the after the fall when God is speaking to Adam and he says, "Where art thou?"
Right,
And then Adam confesses. Adam said, "I heard,
right.
I feared, and I hear."
Right.
But God's question, it wasn't a question of location.
Right.
It was a question of identity.
Exactly.
Who are you listening to? Are you listening to the God in you?
Right.
Or are you listening to some other strange voices that tell you to hide?
Which Jesus then goes and rebuts Adam's statement when Adam says, well, we were hiding because we were naked. And then Jesus counters and said, well, who told you were naked?
Yes, I was naked. I was ashamed.
Right.
And I hid.
So, that's the most profound statement of that whole story is when Jesus says to Adam, well, who told you were naked? Now,
yes.
Jesus is challenging Adam's statement. He said, well, who told you that? Who told you were naked? So we so often buy into concepts and beliefs of other people's perspective, and we never challenge those perspectives to see if they're authentic, for us. They may not be. You know,
do you think that confrontation is necessary?
I think that there's a way to move in confrontation that does not have to be destructive. But I think
mm-hmm.
confrontation is something that is almost impossible to get around. It's just how we handle it. I think that it is something that is necessary. I don't think that we can avoid it, but I think the way we go about it, I don't think it has to be destructive. I don't think it has to be violent. I don't think it has to be forceful. But I do think that there's a way to move into a place where, we can agree to disagree, and we can also move into a place where we're very clear on our position of where we are and be okay with being clear on our position without having to be forceful in that position.
Now, with regard to our position, what do you believe about the purpose as it regards to life? What about our life purpose?
Well, I think that we spend a lifetime of misery and suffering. Most of us won't admit it. We're too ashamed to do it, and we hide behind many things not to have to deal with. When we spoke about that piece about truth and the real pains that we face, but I think that we spend a lifetime in search of purpose and meaning in our lives because we have identified with so many other things that are not authentic. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people that we are human beings, not human doing. We're very clear when we say biblically, again, from a Christian perspective, we say this: in God we live, move, and have our being.
Yes.
Well, the being is the most important. And I always ask people, well, what do you think that is when we say in God we have our being? And people get silent. They don't seem to have an answer for the being. Now, they do the living real quickly.
Yes.
But I said the being is the very essence of who we are, is God.
Well, and when we look at it from, say, even the statement, one nation under God, if we're having our being in God, then we're not one nation under God because God is already in us.
Exactly.
And so if we're one nation under God, we're one nation without God.
Well, I always say if you go back to the beginning of Genesis, you kind of get a clue. And at the very beginning of Genesis, there's this conversation when creation is even beginning to be discussed, and it said, let us make humankind in our image.
Yes.
Well, who's the us? Who's the us?
That's God in the manifest being, manifold being of God.
Exactly.
Because, God is pluralistic. And even if you look at Genesis 1 and 27, he said, created he them both male and female. He created him. So there's two accounts of creation in Genesis. And one time when he took the woman out of the rib, and the other time when he just created man, and the being was they're often intertwined with each other. But when you're honest, how does truth work to make you better when the truth often hurts?
Well, we have to get comfortable with the truth, and when I say the truth, that differs for each individual. Shakespeare said something very powerful. He says, to thine own self be true and to none other.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people that the very essence of you is God. So the only person who would really know your journey and your path is you.
Mm-hmm.
Not mama and them, not daddy and them, not auntie and uncle and them, not your church, not your pastor, not the deacon boy. The only authentic you is you. That's why we say universe, you.
Yes.
And so often, even as we wrap up into this discussion about manhood, we're so busy trying to be all of the other entities that we see, we hear, we view, and we forget to be our authentic selves, which is God expressed divinely in you, universe.
Yes. Amen. Well, Brother Rick Scribes, we've got 1 minute and 30 seconds left. We so greatly appreciate you. Man, I tell you, we're going to have to do this again and get you back on here because one sister, she did contact me, and she asked me a very poignant question. And she said, we always hear about women who emasculate men, but what about the men who defeminize women?
Yeah,
That is the next show. We're going to talk about that. How men defeminize women, how they take that away. Make sure you tune in next time. Continue to listen on our website, helpsomebody.net, or follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/helpsomebody. I'll be happy to send you a note when we're back on the air. We're going to talk about how men defeminize women. We're so happy that you're here. I'm Reverend Carl White with my special guest, Minister Rick Grimes. God bless you. God keep you. God direct you and God protect you. Just remember, there's nothing you can do. No place you can go. In all thy ways, acknowledge him. Acknowledge God, the creator, the lover, the father, the mother of everything that's human. And God in you will always come through. We love you, and there is absolutely nothing else you can do about it. I'm Reverend Carl Whitaker, and thank you for another episode of Can We Be Real? Until we meet again, God bless you.